Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up, a pioneer in women's running looks back on a long marathon career.
Mostly I felt a pioneer, not just because I was a woman running, but I was already in my 40s. So I was an older woman showing younger women and women my age that of course you can do it. You don't have to stop because you've turned 30 or something like that. I stopped competing at 75. I pinned a race number on for the last time at 75.
Okay.
But I still run.
What running means to a trans activist.
I feel confident if I am bullied that I can defend myself, and that comes from some street smarts I gathered as a youngster. That gives me a sense, but I can tell you that if I am bullied and I'm outnumbered, I can probably run away faster than my attackers. So it gives me that sense of security and emotional release, as well as gives me a sense of physical and psychological confidence when in a stressful, and especially a physically stressful situation.
Yeah. And getting ready to go 100K.
We found this really funky 100-kilometer and 100-mile race that's out in the Fountain Hills, Arizona area called the Javelina 100. And it is a really neat race. It's got three loops with a little add-on to it, washing machine loops, so you're going to be able to spend some time out there again, as we'd like to do. And, there's people with costumes as normal, and their aid stations are really, jazzed up with music and that kind of thing. But to try something, big and special that we both have wanted to do. And with us, when we set our minds on something, we make the decision that we do it, then we go right ahead and do it.
On this edition of iRun Radio, the remarkable Diane Palmason, who has run 78 marathons and is still going at age 81. A couple getting ready for a 100K race this fall, and we'll dig deeper into the experience of trans athletes at major running events. Let's get things started now with the editor and general manager of iRun, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hey there.
How are you today?
I'm feeling great, thank you.
What is the farthest you have ever run at one time?
Well, 42.2.
Right. You've never gone further than a marathon. There's nothing wrong with that.
Makes me feel bad.
Yeah, exactly. What, you've only run 42.2 kilometers? That's it? Yeah.
One time I had a running partner who had this idea of doing a warm-up run prior to the marathon. Like, we would run to the marathon.
Yeah.
And now I'm not saying that it's completely his fault and that's what did me in, because, 99 different things can go wrong. But I will say that race was arduous for me.
Okay.
And but I guess I did officially go 43.22, and it went poorly.
Okay. But, it's funny you say that, because I remember one of the first or second times I was training for a marathon, and there was this coach who came to speak to our group and said, okay, here's how you need to warm up on the day of a marathon. And there are people who will do like a 3K warm-up run the morning of the marathon before they do the marathon. And at the time I was thinking, what? You actually... To prepare for running farther than I've ever run before in my life, you want me to run more? What? That doesn't make any sense, Like
there are some things that you hear around the sport that just don't pass the sniff test. Now, okay, if you're trying to break 2 hours or if you
are... Sure, if you're an Olympic athlete.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see the logic of it, but to me it was like, why can't the first 5K of the race be my warm-up? Why isn't that my warm-up, So, anyway, it just seems so out there to me, the idea that you're in a little while you're going to be running 42 kilometers. You've never even gone past 32 before, but to prepare for that, you got to run some more. Anyway.
Yeah, and as someone who did that, I can tell you that, lo and behold, it doesn't work. It's a terrible idea. It sounds like a terrible idea. I tried it. It's horrible.
Well, having said all of that, of course, last week on the show, we talked to somebody who's doing the Comrades Marathon in South Africa. That's 89 kilometers. We're going to have a guest on the show today who, along with his wife, is going to be running a 100-kilometer event this fall. So there are longer races,
Sure.
They're so far they're not for me.
There's also always but whenever you do these races, too, there's always somebody doing it barefoot. Or yeah.
Yeah. Or there's somebody. I mean, on last week's show, we also talked to Eric Strand, who does the double marathons, right? So you're showing up at the start line and thinking, okay, can I get to the finish line? And he's starting at the finish line, running to the start line, and then joining the field to run to the finish line. No, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all great stuff. And look, everybody's got their distance.
Yep.
So more power to them. I know you've been connected to the Divas Running Series that's coming up on Monday night in Toronto, and there are a number of great speakers. We're going to talk to one of them on the show today, Susan Gapka, who is a transgender advocate and athlete, and she's going to share her story, and she's going to be speaking at this event on Monday night, and it's a very powerful message, isn't it?
Yeah, and the more we can do, you know, because it's one thing to talk about what shoes to wear and, you know, the different ways you can stretch your quads, and that stuff is important. It does have a place, but we're also, as we're always saying, you know, part of society and part of humanity, and if we can help shape the world toward one in which we want to live, I mean, running does have a voice, and we have a platform, and I think her message is very important, and I think running can and should and must do more.
Yeah, and we have shared a story about her at iRun.ca, right?
Yeah, that's right, and it's doing very, I mean, and you always see when we post these stuff and when we get behind someone like Susan that the readers really respond. I mean, you know, the numbers for this are through the roof, and it's as they should be, because this is what, you know, the time is now for inclusivity and diversity, and running is a sport for everyone. We do not discriminate, and, you know, we honor all and celebrate all.
Yeah, and I find it fascinating. Of course, I'm old enough to have grown up in a time where everything was viewed through the lens of gender and a very binary lens. And it was girls and boys and men and women, and that's it. And we live in a different time now, and we need to embrace that, and we need to move things forward even faster. And I wonder, and I'm going to ask Susan about this, do we foresee a day where when you enter a race, you don't specify your gender at all? You just go out and run. And maybe the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's comical. I mean, when you hear these things, when you hear the complaints that you read, but people, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's a conversation for another day, but people are such in a rush to get up in arms. You know, some of the commentators on social media just go crazy. Come on. You know, I don't know what it is that brings these emotions to light like that, but,
it's a resistance to change or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. All right. Great stuff, Ben. I really appreciate you joining us this week. Have a great week.
Thanks for your time, my friend.
That is Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. Coming up next, a women's running pioneer who is still running in her 80s. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. Welcome back to iRun Radio. iRun Radio is on the air every Sunday morning on 1310 News in Ottawa, and you can also listen to the podcast and check out past editions of the show at iRun.ca. Just click on Radio. I first chatted with Diane Palmason a few years ago when I was writing a book about the history of the Ottawa Marathon. Diane did the Ottawa Marathon many times in its early days when there weren't a lot of women running marathons. She's now 81 years old and still running. Diane, welcome to iRun Radio.
It is a pleasure to join you.
So tell me about how this started. You and I first chatted when I was working on a book celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Ottawa Marathon, and you had run it many times in its early years. And
right.
I think you initially were inspired by seeing a picture of Eleanor Thomas having completed the marathon, right?
Having completed the very first one.
Right.
Which was 1975.
Yeah.
And until that time, I didn't even know there was such. Well, there wasn't. That was the first one, but I didn't know women ran that distance. I had no idea.
Well, and a lot of women didn't. And in fact, this was still a time when it was highly discouraged, wasn't it?
Oh yes, Oh, yes. You know, you're doing what? there were women had started running in the U.S. With such silly requirements as, well, you have to have a chaperone with you, things like that. You can ask Kathy Switzer. Well, that's one of her favorite stories.
Yeah.
She told she had to have a chaperone.
So, and at that time, of course, the longest race in the Olympics was 800 meters or something like that. So,
I think by that time they'd gone to the 1500.
Right. Yeah. So, what made you decide, okay, Eleanor Thomas has run a marathon in Ottawa, I'm going to do the same thing?
Illogical thought, wasn't it? Many people thought that it was, what? Where did that come from? But because I had been, I had been a runner since, I love to run, 6, 7, 8 years old, Sunday school picnics, things like that. And, of course, then joined a track club with which was run by Myrtle Cook, the woman. One of the match was six. One of the members of the Canadian Women's Olympic team for 1928, and Myrtle was a great supporter of women's sports, and she went to high schools and track meets and recruited me from a high school track meet in Montreal. But of course, at that time, we couldn't run any, at my age, I was only 12 or 13, couldn't run any further than 100 meters. But then with the Commonwealth Games coming along, which was an international competition, Myrtle made the point very strongly, look, Canada has this silly regulation that girls under 16 can't run beyond 100 meters, but internationally they don't. She can run 200 meters. So they let me try out, and I placed, I think I was second to the Canadian champion in 200 meters and made the Commonwealth Games team.
Let's jump ahead, though, to when you started doing marathons at the Ottawa Marathon what that experience was like in those early days. And I know you turned to Eleanor Thomas for some advice, right, on what to
absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely. I phoned her the week before and said, you don't know me, but I saw your name in the paper. And the thing to point out, that I should point out, by the way, was I didn't know anything about any kind of road racing. I'd never run on the road. I'd never raced anything except the track back in the, back in the 50s. So it was a bit odd to start with the marathon, but that was the only race in town that I knew of in Ottawa, and so I ran it. And I kept running it because it was a wonderful experience. I found very quickly that I love to do this. So.
And how many marathons did you end up running?
78
marathons. Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. You must have enjoyed it, obviously. You loved it.
Well, I got, and here's one of the things the Ottawa Marathon did for me, but without particularly planning. They made arrangements with other marathons, nationally and internationally. You give a prize entry to one of our top athletes, and we'll give you one,
right.
We'll send, do an exchange. Well, thanks to that, those kinds of exchanges, I ended up running in the Helsinki City Marathon in 1984, direct exchange from the national capital. And that was the only time I actually won the race overall. I was the first woman.
But you also won a lot of masters titles, right?
Oh, I don't, yes, lots and lots.
Yeah. And what was it that you liked about long distance running so much?
Well, I just like to run, and I should point out that I wasn't just a marathon runner as my career, quote unquote, developed. So that at one time in 2003, I had the Canadian records for 100 meters, 200 meters, 400 meters, 800 meters, 1500, and the mile and the marathon. Because I liked it.
Now, did you feel a little bit like a pioneer because so few women were running long distances at that time?
Mostly I felt a pioneer, not just because I was a woman running, but I was already in my 40s. So I was an older woman showing younger women and women my age, that of course you can do it. You don't have to stop because you've turned 30 or something like that. So I think I kept my position as I kept running, because I did, you know, I stopped running at 75. I shouldn't say I stopped running. I stopped competing at 75. I pinned a race number on for the last time at 75.
Okay.
But I still run.
You still run. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that. How often do you run?
Oh, 3 times a week, I guess. I live here on this beautiful island where there are trails all around, and pretty much, well, it's usually possible to run on the trails around here year-round because of the climate. This year, we had unusual weather, as you did in Ottawa, I understand, and the snow has stayed a little longer, so I haven't been able to get on my preferred trail. But it's very close to home, and so I walk my dog to get a little bit of a warm-up, and then leave her in the backyard and head over to what's called a nature park, which is a trail around that it's not being groomed or anything. The trees and the bushes and the birds, and it's very much like you are out in nature, only it's about 8 minutes from home. And I run there for 30, 40 minutes, and then I run back.
And you still enjoy it, obviously. And
oh, yes.
Yeah. What does it give you? What do you get from running?
Well, I'll tell you one of the things it's giving me right now. I've kind of moved my emphasis from being, in fact, I tell people, I was a runner who did a little bit of writing. Now I'm more a writer who's doing a little bit of running. I'm writing the story of my Icelandic great-grandmother and who came to Canada all by herself in 1884.
Wow.
So I'm having great fun researching this. I've been to Iceland a couple of times to the area that she came from and so on. So what I find, I'm sitting here looking at a draft that I'm revising right now. And when I'm stuck, I've had enough or I'm stiff, I just close down the computer and put my shoes on and go for a run. And it makes such a difference.
Sounds great.
I just come back, and you must have some experience of that.
I do. I do. I can relate to that. Yeah. And tell me, what are some of your strongest memories from when you were running marathons and winning master's titles back in the 1970s and 80s?
80s and 90s.
Yes.
Well, oh, gosh. There are a lot. There have been a lot of highlights. One of them, again, back to the National Capital, was the, I think it was 1980, and I had by that time run 6 or 7 marathons, I guess. And I knew, I had been to Hanover, Germany for a master's track meet, and I had run 3 hours and 1 minute. And I thought, well, that's ridiculous. You can run a little fast. You know, 1 minute, you can do it. So I trained for a pace of 2:57. This is what I really want to do. And started out, down the road in Ottawa, and a man came up beside me and recognized me and asked me my pace. And I said, well, I really want to break 3 hours. He said, well, so do I. Do you mind if I run along? So we ran along and we chatted, and eventually the chatting ran out, and you get, you know, hang in there, keep going. Long story short, to use that trite expression, we ran 2:52.
Wow.
And we were out our skulls with delight.
I'm sure you
and
were.
And I remember Hap Boudreau, who used to be with CBC, I think. He came up, it was pouring rain, so just he came up and, you know, interviewed me, and so that was truly a breakthrough.
Yeah,
and then after that, I did take another 6 minutes or so off to a 2:46.
Well,
but
Diane,
it was on a rainy day in Ottawa that I thought, wow.
Yeah, that's a great story. It's so nice to talk to you again, Diane, and I wish you all the best with your running and your writing. Thank you very much for being with us on iRun Radio.
You're most welcome. I enjoyed chatting with you.
That's Diane Palmason, who now lives in British Columbia. Coming up next, how to be more inclusive to to trans runners.
I Run Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you.
Susan Gapka is a runner and a trans activist. On Monday, she'll be part of a panel discussion being organized by the Divas Running Series, which is dedicated to creating space for all women to enjoy running. Susan, welcome to I Run Radio.
Well, thank you so much, I Run, for including me in this conversation. I'm really excited to share my personal perspectives and some of my views on the way forward with you and your audience.
I'm really excited to have this conversation as well. And I've been thinking about it a lot recently, actually. And I've been thinking about how, when it comes to running events, we divide the field up into men and women and age categories. To qualify for the Boston Marathon, we divide up the qualifying times between men and women in age categories. And I wonder if there's a different way to do things and what that looks like. And if 10 years from now or 20 years from now, we no longer will divide races along those lines. What do you think?
Well, I'm really hopeful it doesn't take that long, but certainly my area of interest, you know, I've come first in the Toronto Pride and Remembrance Run. It was my first race, and I did it for health and charity. And the reason I started running outdoors was because as a student, my membership had expired to be able to use the gym, and I got bullied at the community centers because they were unregulated. So I found running outdoors to be individual and very and free from some of the harassment I would get in group settings.
Wow. It was a safer environment for you, basically.
It felt like that at the time. And so then I ran for the Pride and Remembrance Run, and they created a trans category. And while I see myself as a woman or as a trans woman, if we're talking about that, as a type of woman, I checked it off for political reasons. I've been coming first in that category for like 6 out of 7 years.
Good for you.
And I tell people, and I'll tell you, it's like I'm not that fast, and I'm not that good, but I'm rather unique in my age and sex category, and so I get rewarded for that.
So categories work in your favor in one respect, anyway.
In that respect, someone ran faster than me in my category last year, but, you know, trans is such a broad category, right? Does that mean in non-binary people? Someone like myself, who's from a transsexual history, has done medical interventions and has, and I think around the change in physical structure through medical interventions and hormone therapy, has actually reduced my strength in so many ways. So I find that to be both a disadvantage and, of course, coming first in my category, an advantage.
Right.
But
ultimately, where do you see this going?
Interested in the recreational aspect of it, but it does leak into the elite performance, like the marathons you were talking about, on how we designate categories.
How can running become more inclusive, though, and more respectful?
Well, I do say that unless you're a runner or a running organization, you have no authority to impose the rules on people involved. We find that our opponents are people who are opposing trans people in sports as having an advantage. And if maybe I have an advantage because I'm unique in one particular race, but basically we'd be winning all the races if we had an advantage. That's not the case. It's an exception when someone runs well from a trans background.
Right.
So I think for my goal is in recreational and just healthy activities, we have more inclusion in that, that it's less important about sex and gender categories, and that we just have that those opportunities available. Yeah. That could, and that, I don't know what the answer is around how you do the categories, but opening them up like the Pride and Remembrance Run to add a second or third or fourth category would be, I think, a good start.
Yeah. So do you think ultimately it is about adding more categories rather than eliminating categories? Because I can see the argument for not specifying gender, but at the same time, then I think that would mean that a lot of women would not be on the podium anymore if there were no categories at all, right? So how do you strike that balance to be inclusive and respectful, but still give everybody a chance to participate and win?
Well, again, I think it comes from the general, from community-based events, like the local running events. I think just a lot of sports and recreation that is inclusive, that doesn't have those categories, is really where I aim. And let's look at hockey helmets. They do it in the junior leagues, and by the time they grow into men or women in hockey, people wear them in the professional leagues. So I think be more inclusive, and that'll sort it out. We're having a panel on Monday at the Gladstone Hotel, 7 p.m. in Toronto, to have more conversation from different points of view on this. And I think having those conversations is an excellent, excellent step in that direction. I don't know what the answers are, because potentially so much has changed in the last 10 years around trans inclusion and trans rights. It could be a different lay of the land in another 5 years.
Sure.
But being more inclusive is better than being exclusive.
So what's the most important message? What do you want to send as a message at this event in Toronto as part of the Divas Running Series on Monday?
Well, I'm really looking forward to participating in the conversation. I think if more people, I'll just share with you what physical activity has done for my recovery and my health and well-being. It's been an enormously empowering experience that I'm able to share that experience. I want to see the opportunities that I've had to be included in running and whichever category, as difficult as it's been, that change rooms and that I'm not challenged on my eligibility, that younger people have the opportunities that many of us older people didn't have as youngsters. It's really, social isolation is fundamental in trans and other disadvantaged communities. This is, physical activity is so rich in emotional, psychological, and physical health. And so I hope that can be shared by a whole generation of young people growing up.
Yeah. That would be great. So what has running done for you? Tell me about some of your running experiences and what this has, what it has meant for you to be a runner.
Well, and what it does for me, it gives me great psychological release of all the stresses of the world. I work in public policy and sometimes government relations. I'm employed at the 519, where I do this sort of work as well on special projects. But what happens is, for me, it just gives me a sense of release from the everyday stresses, which is excellent. It gives me physical health. So I joke, I can end on this joke, I guess, is like sometimes I feel confident if I am bullied that I can defend myself. And that comes from some street smarts I gathered as a youngster. That gives me a sense, but I can tell you that if I am bullied and I'm outnumbered, I can probably run away faster than my attackers. So it gives me that sense of security and emotional release, as well as gives me a sense of physical and psychological confidence when in a stressful, and especially a physically stressful situation.
Yeah. Well, I know you were saying it in part in jest, but it's a powerful message. It obviously makes you feel stronger and more secure and more confident, right?
And there is some real, you know, I'm an individual runner. I do individual sports with my schedule. But there is a real sense of camaraderie running in a 10K or a half marathon. I usually run 10Ks, but I try to run half, just to be able to run half a marathon when I could barely run around the park, like, and had to work my way up to 5K a decade ago, is a real sense of accomplishment for myself and a sense of empowerment in that regard.
Yeah,
but
good for you.
Yeah.
Well, it's a very powerful message.
I know there was something else, but it slipped my mind.
Well, it's a very powerful message that you're sharing. I'm very inspired by what you're doing, and I'm sure this conversation that you are participating in and leading is going to lead to a lot of good things. Thank you so much for joining us on iRun Radio.
Thank you so much. Have a great day, and all I can end with is you got to keep on running. So everybody, best of luck on that.
Right on. Thank you, Susan.
Bye-bye.
That's Susan Gapka, a runner and trans activist in Toronto. Coming up next, going 100K for a pair of 50th birthdays. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. Brian Doan and his wife Heather Thompson have achieved a number of remarkable long-distance running feats, including completing all the World Marathon Majors and a whole bunch of ultramarathons. They've done all of that to support two causes very close to their hearts. We're joined by Brian Doan on iRun Radio. Brian, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for bumping into me the other day.
Yeah, it was nice to run into you and catch up with you. And we've spoken before about some of your running exploits, you and your wife, Heather, participate in a lot of events. You've done some ultra marathons and marathons and other ambitious challenges. But let's go over your story a little bit, Brian. What does running mean for you, and why have you taken it on, and why in particular have you chosen to support this cause that you get behind?
Well, having gone through some cancer back in my mid-20s, you know, you kind of realize you have a second lease on life. And when you look at that, you think, what can I do to challenge myself as much as I can and make the best of my time? And I'd run a couple of 10Ks and a half marathon. And I thought to myself, well, let's see what this marathoning thing is all about. And as you very well know yourself, you catch that bug. And the next thing you know, you're into a few marathons and quite a few marathons. And 18 marathons later, you know, the challenge is still there, but you kind of get that hankering for something a little bit different. And, you know, if I get any chance to go out there and promote testicular cancer and its awareness, you know, I do. And same thing with Heather, you know, she supports information and education on brain, acquired brain injury due to her sister's accident quite a few years ago now. And, you know, when we get a chance to talk to some people or even just bump into people and find out what charities they're running for, you know, we always sort of share stories and share information. And you know, again, as we've said for many years, if we can help one person out, then we've done our job. So any kind of challenges that we can get out and do, we absolutely run towards them as opposed to run away from them.
Yeah, good for you. And it's the two causes that you support that we've talked about before. And you've raised money, you've raised awareness, you've entered races in the name of these important causes, and that's very powerful stuff. So let's talk about some of the events that you've done, some of the long-distance runs that the two of you have done together. Tell me about some of those.
Well, we after quite a few marathons, we decided that, you know, we looked at the World Marathon Majors, and we wanted to try to complete those in some point in our running lives. And, you know, typical to us, we wanted to add a little twist to it. So we decided in one year, 2011, that we were going to run all of the World Majors in one year, which that particular year consisted of a back-to-back with London, England, and Boston, which certainly made it interesting for us. And it got us to train, you know, two-day runs in a row. So we'd do a long run of, say, 30K on a Saturday, and then a lesser run of, you know, 17, 18K on the Sunday. And, you know, we didn't hate it. It was something that was a different a style of running for us. So that got us into thinking about, you know, running longer distances. And, you know, when the after that, you know, jumping to 100K seemed like a bit much. So we found a 50K that was down in Collingwood And Heather, one thing she does that's brilliant is she's great at running, making up these training plans, and she's, you know, well thought out and thinks about the health of your body and thinks about the distances you have to cover and stuff. And so for her, that's a lot of the challenge and interest. And she came up with a nice training plan, and we trained for that 50K. And the only unfortunate part about the 50K there was it's all uphill and downhill, so it made it for a long day. But that certainly started the ultra bug.
Yeah, and what do you get from that, from running these super long distances, from training for them and from doing them together? What is the experience like for you guys?
Well, as you know, running and you know, certain sports, maybe perhaps all sports, that, you know, are quite selfish for the athlete involved. And you know, many of us have left you know, friends and family at home during those special you know, anniversaries and dinners and that kind of thing to go out and get those runs done that we need to get done. So I'm completely privileged to be able to do that with a fellow runner. And together, you know, we as you know from us, we run two very different paces. And you know, we start our runs together, and if we're doing loops, then we'll reverse loops, and we get to catch up halfway through the run to see how it's going with each other. And then obviously post run, you know, you might have a cold pint and, you know, go over the challenges and the highs and the lows of that training run. And, you know, 6 months, 8 months of that kind of training leads you to, you know, a great race day that you're able to share, you know, both again, the highs and the lows together. And so we feel very, very privileged to be able to do that kind of stuff together.
All right. And now you are planning something even bigger. You're both going to do a 100K event, right?
Yeah, we're both turning 50 this summer, and we decided that you know, what better time than doing, you know, 50-50 and 100. So we're you know,
the math works.
The math works exactly. So yeah, we found this really funky 100 kilometer and 100 mile race that's out in the Fountain Hills, Arizona area, called the Javelina 100. And it is a really neat race. It's got you know, three loops with a little add on to it. You know, washing machine loops, so you're going to be able to spend some time out there again, as we'd like to do. And you know, there's people with costumes as normal, and their aid stations are really you know, jazzed up with music and that kind of thing. But try something you know, big and special that we both have wanted to do. And with us, when we set our minds on something, we make the decision that we do it, then we go ahead and do it. So early on January 1st, after waking up a night of celebrating, we signed up, and we're looking forward to it towards the end of October this year.
Okay. And so a lot of training ahead, obviously. You got to build to that for months in advance, right?
Yes, we're starting. Yeah, right now, like, you know, these kind of weeks right now, we're doing smaller Ks, and we're doing a lot of core work. We're doing a lot of strength training just to get your body ready for that. Because over that 100K, as you know, it takes a lot of beating. There's a lot of back and forth movement. So core and strength is going to be key, as well as getting those, you know, back to back runs in and somewhere in there, someplace, squeezing in a little bit of rest.
Yeah, that's always important.
Always important, and also, yeah, Working on nutrition too, because nutrition for a 100 kilometer race is going to be akin to the nutrition we went through with Ironman. So, you know, gaining from that experience of what worked and what didn't work is going to translate nicely into this race, and have, obviously making some adaptations to it as well.
As an aside, you're going to do the 100K, not the 100 mile, right?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And as an aside, aren't you glad that when you set out to do these age-related or numerical-related milestones that you were born in Canada, and that you can, if you decided to run 50K on your 50th birthday, for example, or something like that, that you're doing kilometers and not miles?
Oh, I thank my lucky stars for being born in Ottawa, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, look, this is incredible what you're doing, and I'm so impressed. It's such a long distance to run. Are there any unique challenges to the preparation for this?
I think some of the challenges, you know, we've spoken about the nutrition. I think that's going to be key, even though there are quite a few aid stations. I think also the preparation with these kind of races, and I'm learning new things about these from some ultra friends that we have, you know, that part of the way through the race, you're changing shoes, you're changing socks, You're going from long sleeve or short sleeves to long sleeves because you are going to be. Heather certainly won't be running when the sun goes down, but I'll still be out there when the sun goes down. So those are a couple of little things that you have to adapt to. Running with a nightlight. So our training isn't just simply sliding out after work and doing, you know, a 15K run. It's going to be setting an alarm clock for 3 o'clock in the morning and getting out and doing, you know, a 3-hour run in as the sun comes up.
Right.
And out in the dark and have to eat different foods that, you know, we're not used to eating while we run. And as well, you know, we're going to be battling temperatures of 100 degrees, 100 plus degrees out there. So if there's a factor involved, it's included in this race. And the one thing that makes it even worse for Heather, who has a huge issue with snakes, every time you go on YouTube and watch a video of the Javelina 100, there's somebody always out there with an iPhone saying, "Oh, look, another rattler snake."
So, oh God.
She saw that after she signed up, so we're okay with it.
Right. You're going to make the best of it. But that's an important tip that you've got to simulate the conditions you're going to experience on race day in your training, right?
I think it's very important. I mean, as I said with marathons, anybody can get through a marathon. But if you want to get through it and enjoy it and have a time that you're happy with and have the shape of your body feel like you're happy with it. You know, when we did our double-double in London and Boston, you know, there's 2 marathons in 2 days. A lot of people can do that. But at the end of the day, we wanted to be able to walk to the celebrations on that Monday night and not crawl. So, you know, Heather's preparation with her training schedule allowed us to have 2 42K runs. And that, you know, we were tired, don't get me wrong, but we certainly were walking that night,
right.
And that's certainly thanks to the training schedule that she put forward.
Yeah, we should tell that story because a few years back you did all the World Marathon Majors, and that included doing London and Boston on consecutive days because London was on the Sunday and Boston was on the Monday, right?
Yep, and we literally crossed the finish line in London, picked up our bags, went to the airport, got all relaxed in the lounge and hopped on a British Airways flight straight into Boston. We have family out near the start line, so we went out there, caught a couple hours of Z's, and then got up and did our warm-up run, our two-mile warm-up run over to the start line of the Boston Marathon, and then ran that. So it was a special day for us, that's for sure. We certainly enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, the two of you are such an inspiration. I look forward to following this journey all the way up to your 100K race this fall. Good luck with your preparation and training, and we'll check in with you again soon. Thanks for joining us, Brian.
Excellent. Thanks again, Mark. Appreciate that.
That's Brian Doan of Ottawa. Coming up in the weeks ahead on iRun Radio, we're going to talk to some of the runners who are getting ready for Ottawa Race Weekend and raising lots of money for important causes. And a couple of people who finished the recent Tokyo Marathon, one of the world's marathon majors. I hope you can join us next week on iRun Radio. Thank you for listening. Have a great week.